Hello and welcome to the Partial Durations podcast. I'm Matthew Lorenzon, and in this series we're going to choose pieces from the Making Waves playlist. The Making Waves playlist is a playlist of contemporary Australian music, and we're going to interview the composers of some of these pieces about their inspirations and their processes, beginning with Jessica Wells and her piece Muntawalunga for solo harp. Thank you very much, Jess, for joining me on the first Partial Durations podcast.
Thanks for having me, Matthew. It's exciting to be the first one.
So when I first heard the Making Waves playlist, the very beginning of your piece for solo harp grabbed me. It's this beautiful thumping sound followed by this eerie resonance. How do you make that sound?
Well, it's a very interesting harp technique, which I discovered working with Marshall McGuire, who recorded the piece, and I wrote it for him, where it's called a timpani sound, where you basically hit the harp quite violently, with one hand, and at the same time you play some notes with your fingernails on the lower end of the harp. So you're sort of smacking the sounding board and creating this quite a violent sound, actually, from the harp. And it has a really long resonance, which is quite cool, from the sounding board. And I discovered that through Marshall and also a book on harp technique by the famous Carlos Salcedo.
And where did you come across the Carlos Salcedo harp book?
Yes, well, Marshall recommended that I read it, and so got it out of the library at the Conservatorium in Sydney and had a good old look at it. And I was in New York about probably 10 years ago when I went into an old, dusty old Harry Potter-type bookshop and found a copy in there and bought one. So I actually own my own copy now. So it's a fantastic book with some great techniques in it.
What's the book called again?
It's called Modern Study of the Harp by Carlos Salcedo.
Salcedo single-handedly expanded the repertoire of sounds available to the harp, producing all sorts of different resonant and muted sounds that hadn't been used before or weren't commonly used in art music. And he was also a very stylish man himself, and they ended up making a special harp for him at Lion Healy. It's a big Art Nouveau harp that looks like it could have come out of an old Hollywood cinema. Do you use some other sounds from this book in your piece?
Yes, there's a few. One of my favourite ones is called a xylophonic sound. We're trying to sound a little bit like a xylophone. It's a percussive sound where the left hand mutes the strings and the right hand plays above that. And so you get this plectrum-y, percussive short sounds from the harp strings. And I've used that a little bit in the piece that to mimic the sound of African mbiras or thumb pianos. It's quite an effective sound that you wouldn't expect normally from the harp.
And after we hear this muted, syncopated section, we go into this section that's a little bit freer. There's a lot of really beautiful wispy resonance in it. And this part in the score is labeled Lumbu. Can you describe this this marking for us?
Yes, Lumbu is not a technique. It's a reference to the inspiration for the piece, which is an African creation myth. At the time, I was quite interested in different creation myths from around the world, and I came across this one from the Central African area of Zaire, the Bakongo people. And the idea is that the creation of humans, male and female, happened when a being called Muntawalunga, which the piece is named after, which is the complete person, is represented by a tree, often carvings that they have, where one side is a woman and one side is a man, and they are one person. And the piece is based on the idea of the two splitting from the one. And so Lumbu is the male half, and then we have Muzita, who is the female half. And in the piece, I've got different sections which refer to the male and the female part, and also the sort of magical splitting of the two beings.
Let's listen to Lumbu now. During that excerpt, I heard some wonderful sweeping sounds, almost gushing sounds, and you call them in your score gushing chords. Can you describe that technique to me a bit?
Sure. This one is very simple notation with two notes spread apart, and they're connected by a stem. And in the middle of the stem, there's a little arrow going up or down. And basically what it means is to sort of strum your hand, flat hand, along the strings, up or down, so you get this gushing chord up or down. It's quite a nice effect. Good one from Salcedo again.
Thank you, Salcedo.
Yep, absolutely. And when you try it out for real, you think, oh, you see the notation, but then when you try it for real, you realize the potential of what that sound can do.
One thing I really love about these first sections is this little turn at the end of each section, where you have some contrary motion in the two hands of the harp. And it's almost like an afterthought or just a little throw-off gesture at the end. I like to think that that's representing this complete person that is has the two sides in opposite directions.
Yes, I like that analysis. I'll have to add that to my program note.
That sort of contrary motion is something that a composer might just put in. They see it on the paper and they write it on the paper. On the other hand, it's something that probably feels quite comfortable under the hands of the harpist as well.
Yes, definitely. And I worked with Marshall on this piece to try and make sure it was playable. It is very challenging, obviously. It's a very tricky piece to play. A lot of pedal changes, but also it just has to fit under the hands well in some parts, and that's what I was going for. But yeah, it is interesting to think that you just try things out on the page, but you are thinking about how it's going to work. And the very last section of the piece, I often sort of do this in my work, is basically a retrograde of the opening. And I tend to try these things out and see, is this going to work? And it did. So the end section of the piece is actually just a reversal of the beginning. Mm-hmm.
But in the meantime, we hear Muzita. Mm-hmm. This is also another beautiful section. I really love these muted short notes and these rustling string sounds. What is the instruction you've given to the harpist to make these really sort of rustling sounds behind these muted pinpoints of sound?
Yes, there are a couple of different techniques. One is a very slow, long glissando, very up high, and près de la table, which is closer to the fingerboard. So it gives it that eerie quality. And there's also another section where they do some rustling, which is basically just rubbing the hand over the strings, which gives a very, very soft, eerie effect. And I've contrasted those textures with some little pinpointed, pointillistic notes, which are instantly muted. You play the note on the string and instantly mute it. So it's again playing with the idea of you know, a free-flowing and resonating sound against a very pointillistic, muted sound.
Okay, let's listen to Musita now. I really like it how in this piece, man and woman aren't contrasted in a really obvious way. So we begin with this dynamic, rhythmic, stricter type of writing, which isn't actually either man or woman. And then both man and woman get these quite lyrical and spacious parts. Mm-hmm. So what is this rhythmic material then, the sort of thumb piano imitating material, does that play a role in the narrative?
For me this was the thumb piano idea of the African style, the rhythmic playing, the sort of muted playing and quite driving. And for me it's kind of like an introduction to the world that we've stepped into, and also a bit of the sort of magic that's surrounding these beings and how they've become split. And yes, the male and the female are not dissimilar in some ways, in that they're freer, and maybe it's the freeing of them that's kind of the symbolism of the contrast between the rhythmic, strict, metered sections against the sections which are free and almost, you know, aleatoric in some parts.
And so this magic leads them to be split, and there's almost an oral, you know, a painting of this splitting at the end of Musita, where we suddenly get what you call the thunder effect, which is just an incredibly violent sound. Can you describe a bit how we get this sound?
Mm. Yes, it's a really amazing sound the harp can make. You wouldn't think of a harp being able to do this, but with the lowest strings, if you sort of strum them very hard, they actually jangle against each other. So you actually get this sort of slapping of the strings against each other. And so it's you get quite a violent effect from that. And for me, that sound was fantastic to represent the splitting of this tree, because I guess when you think about chopping a tree down, you'd think you've that sort of quite abrasive sound of wood cracking. So those jangling strings were a great idea to use in the piece for that violent splitting of the two beings.
Now, you've said that there's a retrograde movement at the end of the piece, but before we get to that reversal of the opening, we also get Lumbu and Musita coming back, and I can't help, perhaps it's because I knew the story that you were trying to tell, but it felt to me that they really were sadder this time.
Yes, I think they're winding down a little bit. They're like, oh, this has happened, I suppose, and we want to be together again. And the story, the creation myth does say that once they are split, they always want to be back together and embrace each other once again. So a little bit tinge of sadness there that they've lost their oneness. They need to actually try to get back together again somehow. Maybe that's what it was trying to say in the piece. It's a good description, yeah.
And when you were actually writing that, by this point you probably had workshopped some of the sections with Marshall or with a harpist. Mm-hmm. Did you find that when you were returning to these episodes and then rewriting them effectively, that you were thinking about them differently, or you'd brought some lessons that you'd learnt to bear on this new section?
Yes, I think it didn't have to be exactly the same. I like to not repeat things too much. And so I wanted to make sure that when those fragments or ideas returned, that they are changed in some way. And also, that some techniques are slightly similar, but a little bit different. So it's nice to kind of group them together and give the same kind of feeling, but with a slightly different technique. And of course, Marshall would say to me, "Oh, Jess, do you have to do this to me?" in some parts. But once I knew he could actually play it and it could be played, I actually didn't change it sometimes, because I knew that with perseverance he'd be able to play it anyway. It's the luxury of working with, one of the best harpists in Australia.
And there were also some pedaling difficulties. The harp has one string for every diatonic note, like C, D, E, F, G. And then the pedals allow the harpist to change the pitch of each one of these notes by up to two semitones or up to a whole tone. But this means that you have a limited range of chords that you can actually play on the instrument. Was this a problem during the composition of this piece?
Yes, you have to think quite differently for the harp. You cannot do chromatic writing terribly well because you need to change the pedals in between. But so the best way to approach it is to think in groups of notes or cells of notes, say eight notes at a time. And some of the settings then I was able to leave on the pedals for a section of music and then change pedals as required to change some of the notes. So in some cases I've got A natural, G natural, F flat, which is the same as E, E flat, D flat, C and B. So you get an interesting group of notes, which gives you some chromatic combinations. But obviously you cannot do something like C, C sharp, D, D sharp, E. That's impossible on the harp without changing the notes in between. So it's best with harp writing to think in pitch sets as you write.
And as you've explored in this piece, you can actually play while you're changing the pitches of the notes. So you have pedal glissandi all the way through this piece. Let's listen to some of that now. That must have been quite a discovery, knowing that you can make these sounds.
Yes, I wasn't actually sure if it, what it would sound like and whether it would work. But when Marshall showed me, it was really an interesting and effective thing to do down low on the harp, where you pluck a note and leave it, and then press the pedal up and down to get this chromatic movement. And I think it works really well.
And the piece has had quite an interesting life since it was composed in 2001, isn't that correct?
Yes, I've been very lucky to have it recorded by Marshall, and also he played it at the World Harp Congress many years ago, where obviously a lot of harpists heard the piece. And since then it's been played in a senior recital by a student in the Netherlands. Hopefully it continues to have a life.
Well, thank you very much for talking to us about this wonderful piece, and you can listen to it yourself now over at the Making Waves playlist. And we'll be looking at other pieces from the Making Waves playlists every month. Thank you very much for speaking with me.
Thanks so much, Matthew. It's been lovely to chat.
Thank you for listening to the Partial Durations podcast, produced with support from Real Time Arts. You can find more discussion and reviews of contemporary music, as well as in the future more podcasts, at www.partialdurations.com.